Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is Daphna Zeiman. She is a filmmaker, a philanthropist, and the author of the best-selling novel titled The Gray Zone. Daphna and I will be discussing about her life's journey and her best-selling novel. Good morning, Daphna. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Doing very well, Johnny. It's such an honor to be on your show, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your kind words. It's really an honor to have you on because of the work that you have done. Really enjoyed reading your book. Congratulations on being the best-selling author so quickly. I mean, the book is only out for about a month now, and you are already climbing up the charts. That's fantastic. And all of that is a testament to what you are speaking about, what you stand for, and the things you have done. So that's fabulous.
Well, thank you. I mean, I was actually very surprised myself when the book was released on June 1, and by the end of the month, it was already number 2 on Borders list, and It was number 33 on the New York bestsellers list, and number 10 on Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. But I mean, and I really didn't expect it, so it was a surprise. It was particularly, you know, such an honor to receive the award of Best New Author.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very humbled by the attention, but at the same time, I feel that it's an opportunity for me to talk about the issues that I raise in my book about foster care and human trafficking. And I'm actually thrilled that so many people are interested in opening their eyes, because hopefully we can all come together and serve America by protecting our most precious girls and boys.
Let us start by talking about you. Please give us a snapshot of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, you know, I was born in Israel. My grandfather went to Israel because he wanted to die on Holy Land.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great idealist. He was best friends with David Ben-Gurion at the time, who was Prime Minister of Israel. And my grandfather's idolized America. He used to tell me as I was growing up, look at the Statue of Liberty, look at what it means. It means give me your poor and your huddled as long as they believe in freedom. And, you know, the American history meant so much to me. I spent weeks visiting Ellis Island. I spent a lot of time reading about the Civil War and slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and what I'm finding so distressing now, that slavery is a part of everyday reality in the United States and the rest of the world, when we are enslaving young girls as sex slaves. I left Israel when I was very young, and I went to school in Europe, and then I went to Australia. Eventually, I started working on music and studying, and to get myself through college and school and my work as starting a record company. I worked as a model, and that's what brought me to the United States the first time around. I was very lucky because I founded a record company called Unicorn Records, which was one of the first new wave and punk record company in the world.
Mm-hmm.
People like Black Flag and many other punk bands and new wave bands that have seen great success. And that kind of made me realize that culture is the forefront messenger of where we are in life. And I realized that I wanted to embark on a larger aspect of it. So I went back to school. I studied in UCLA extension courses, directing and writing, and you know, and then I moved to Antioch University with Paul Gray and studied under his directing master program, and because I wanted to expand to the audiovisual aspect of communication and media and storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I found sort of an amazing way of being able to make myself kind of a part of a message in an entertaining way by writing scripts
mm-hmm.
and making movies. But no matter what I did, there was always that little thing inside my heart that said, is that all there is? No matter how much success I received, it was never fulfilling enough. So at
mm-hmm.
first I thought it was about my job, maybe achieving more, maybe being more successful. And quite frankly, that didn't do it. And then I thought maybe it was about love, maybe, you know, being married and
mm-hmm.
having family. And, you know, in a way, no matter what you do, unless you serve, you can't start walking with your destiny.
Mm-hmm.
It is about unconditional love, which you and I talked about, Johnny.
Right.
And it wasn't until I met a 5-year-old little girl in a homeless mission who had already been impacted severely by foster care and a crack mom that hurt her and abused her. It wasn't until I met her and I became her mentor and ultimately her foster parent and then adopted her that I really started walking with my destiny. And it's today I'm grateful to her and God for opening my eyes into what the mission of life is all about.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about bringing into the forefront whatever it is that you can do and tapping into the God-given talents that you have to serve those that are most vulnerable and most at risk in our world today.
Very, very true. What led you specifically to be the advocate for children without parents?
Well, as I told you, when I met my daughter,
mm-hmm.
opened my eyes. Up to that point, all I did was write checks to charities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
When I really gave myself to little girls and little boys that have been removed from their home for no fault of their own because of abuse and neglect and sexual abuse, it was then that I realized that those kids, at best, are caught in a revolving door of strangers where hardly anyone ever remembers even their birthday.
Yeah.
I realized that these kids are the only ones that are swimming against the current. Therefore, they are the only ones that really understand the current.
Mm-hmm.
And we are on the bank watching. And these kids are our future. And when I looked at the statistics, Johnny, and saw that 78.8% of all inmates
mm-hmm.
in penitentiary come from the child welfare system, I realized that we are breeding criminals instead of taking innocent children and educating them and loving them into becoming contributing citizens. Instead of which they are angry and they are injured and they are traumatized. And I decided very early, once I met my daughter,
mm-hmm.
I would never turn my back on another child in need. And through that, I have found myself.
You've done tremendous work in helping others, and you truly have a beautiful heart based on just what I've heard you have said. Let us bring your guest that you have for me, a surprise guest.
Bridget, let me just introduce her a little
sure.
bit. Bridget mm-hmm. came as a refugee from Jakarta with the dream of America. She came here with her whole family. It was a family of 10 with a mother and a father. Her father came here and he got a job, you know, which was a night job with United Airlines for $1.10 an hour. They were moved to South Central in Los Angeles, which is so gang-ridden and violent. And there she realized very early on in her life, at age 6, 7, whatever, that her mother was bipolar and therefore an abuser. And her mother started beating her up and beating her father up and beating her brother up and her sisters. And they were thrown into the foster care system, where her sister was adopted, but she was not. And very early on, after being moved into a foster home, when the foster mother went to sleep, the foster father did whatever he wanted with her. So she kept escaping and going back home, where she would get beaten up all the time. So she was returned to that foster home all the time, where that man kept abusing her sexually. Finally, at age 13, she ran away completely and was walking the streets all along, going to school and finding the only rescue in her life in her school. And when 3 o'clock bell went off, she knew that her life would become a nightmare. And she found a photography studio where she saw that there was a couch or a bed and people didn't use it, and she was so tired because she had nowhere to sleep. So she kept coming back there. And one day the photographer said to her, "What do you want?" And she said, "I want just to sleep and eat here. I'll work for it. I'll do whatever you want me to do." And he said, "Fine." And she thought she had a real job so she could eat and sleep. But a week later, he threatened her life and made her turn tricks. Mm-hmm. 3 years she did that and finished school. And then she went to El Camino Community College and succeeded. And from there she went to UCLA, MBA, and got a master's in economics and became entirely successful to the point of sponsoring our conference, Keeping the Promise to Our Children, in the Congress in Washington, D.C. on Thursday. And it's about sex trafficking. And she has become a voice for every girl who's a sex slave or has been sex trafficked, or every foster child in need. So let me introduce you to Bridget Poblon.
Thank you so much for being on the air with us this morning. It's an honor to meet you and hearing your stories. It resonates with me simply because I understand, because I'm originally from Malaysia, even though my path is totally different. I was adopted at birth in Malaysia and having the opportunity to come here to the United States to go to college and so forth. But I understand. I've heard of stories like that. But certainly when you guys first came here to the United States, you were looking for an American dream, just basically to be successful and to live your life the way you want to. And what you've gone through is just tremendous, and what you're doing right now is even more tremendous. So kudos to you. My hand is definitely off to you.
Thank you so much.
Please tell us a little bit about your experiences and what kept you focused on the things that you want to get done, because obviously willpower is obviously there, because you could have easily fell off the track, so to speak, and never come back. So what kept you focused?
What kept my spirit alive was my faith in God, my education, and that would meant the world to me. It gave me a sanctuary during school where nothing was, there was no child abuse, nobody forcing me to do anything against my will. It was my salvation. It kept my spirit alive, and it kept me going. And I knew down the road, even through all the trauma I had suffered, even during suicide attempt, the only thing that gave me salvation was God and my education, and to strive, and to that there is a better life out there somewhere.
Were there someone in your life that somehow became a mentor that sort of saw you and then just came in and, you know, hey, I can be there for you? I mean, of course, trust is a big issue,
Right. Not during my teen years or my childhood life. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I turned adult that I had partners in real estate. Broker's license. We started developing Orange County and got really involved with that. I kept myself so focused, so positive. Mm-hmm. And over years, a lot of counseling and therapy really helped me really stay focused and helped me not play the victim. It helped me not feel sorry for myself. I needed to find my destiny and find a reason why everything happened to me. Everything has a purpose in life, and I found my purpose in life because my childhood was my adventure, and I look at it as a learning life to help other girls like me who need help and just to stay focused and to move on with their life.
That's wonderful, because a lot of times when people go through life cycle, okay, I've been there, I've done that, and then they sort of fade away. They don't quite understand that sometimes if you look at it, it is my turn to make a difference, and you certainly are doing that right now. So that's fascinating, fascinating story. Daphna, let's come back to you with regards to the gray zone. Tell us a little bit more about it, the inspiration behind writing it, and why the story has to be told.
It's really interesting because I met one of the girls that was the inspiration when I was with Bridget.
Mm-hmm.
We visited a residential group home, a foster home, and right there was a girl who was kept in sort of a glass confined room in confinement, and her name was Kimmy. And you know, I insisted on talking to her, and she and I became friends, and I became her mentor. And she was so resilient, so brilliant. She was already in 30 foster homes, and she was abused, sexually abused and everything. But she was very resilient and very smart and very beautiful. And her courage and how brave she was, similar to Bridget, gave me the idea to write about a girl whose mother was murdered when she was 6 years old. Her father is wrongfully convicted for the murder of the mother, and she's thrown into the foster care system where she's exposed to abuse, neglect, sex trafficking. She goes through it all, and she knows that the only way that she will survive is by running away. And she does that. They keep catching her, and eventually she becomes a chameleon. And then, just when she thinks that she's run away and she's safe, she's picked up by a very successful corporate man who makes her believe that he will give her a place to stay and will take care of her, much like Bridget.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she becomes his sex slave, and he threatens her, and she has 2 children with him. And she runs away, and eventually she meets up with a defense attorney, which I based on Denny Davis. He's a brilliant defense attorney. He's also a media litigator. And together they take on the justice system, the political system, and they win in the gray zone, which mm-hmm. is a place behind closed door where justice really happens.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And you're correct when you mentioned at the very beginning of the show that this is a slavery movement that's happening all over the world in all actuality, and we just close an eye to it because it is not as dramatic or whatever you want to call it, or it's not something that people want to talk about. But slavery in many ways, and child slavery, whether it's labor or sex slave, is very much alive and well.
It is, Johnny. I have to tell you that when you look at the statistics, it is really frightening. 70%, mm-hmm. like for instance, in the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
in the Huffington Post, you can actually read an article written by the investigative reporter who reported that between 50,000 to 100,000 girls were trafficked for the weekend,
mm-hmm.
Super Bowl. 70% of those girls were foster girls. It's not okay. And it's a reflection of the decline of the male species.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is lawyers and doctors and whoever that are using these little girls.
Mm-hmm.
Not one of them spends one day in jail, but yet those girls are criminalized because mm-hmm. looked upon as prostitutes, and they're thrown into juvenile hall, a probation, or jail. And 14 out of 15 rapists don't spend one day in jail.
Very true. And what's bad about it is that the government is not really taking control of the situation.
We were doing this conference in the Congress on Thursday. We have a huge press conference, and many of the legislators, like it's hosted by leader Nancy Pelosi and Michelle Bachmann and Senator Mary Landrieu, and many of the legislators, I believe, our coalition, Congresswoman Karen Bass is the chair of the Congressional Coalition, and Mary Landrieu and Senator Grassley are the chairs of the Senatorial Committee. And collectively, we have about 220 legislators in our coalition now to try and do something.
Right.
I do feel that the conference is of extreme importance. It's called Keeping the Promise to Our Children. It is Children Uniting Nations Conference with the Casey Foundation, with the California Endowment, with the FBI. And hopefully we will make a dent. I mean, with people like Bridget being able to tell her story, I hope that people will wake up and say, this is not the America that the world dreamt of. This is not the American dream.
Very true. And what you guys are doing, it's just tremendous, because you're right that someone needs to get this started, and that's what you did. And I have to say, though, Daphna, it takes a while, but the good news is that change happens slowly, but then it's permanent.
You know, it can't happen too slowly, because every day a girl dies from either being beaten up or strangled or whatever. It's not okay. Human life is very dear. And we can't pretend that human life is cheaper than politics.
Yeah. I think everybody agrees on that statement. I believe me, I tell you what, with the problems that they're having right now in Congress, I think we all agree with that. But the other side of the equation, Daphna, not all foster families are bad. Isn't that right? I mean, there is a flaw.
Absolutely.
There.
I have met, listen, I was a foster parent myself.
Correct.
And
yes.
I have met many, many foster parents who are angels, who do it for the right reason and treat the children well and bring these children into very good, wonderful lives and give them enough love to believe in themselves. It's all about what our mission in life is all about. We leave out our karma, and we leave out, you know, the reality that the most important commandment is unconditional love. If we can love each other and understand each other and be there for each other, whether we are it's a small child or a friend, you know, we will be the kind of society we want to live with. But if we continue to follow this me attitude of ego and greed, it's already proven to be destructive. You know, this is the time for change. You know, our president won his election by asking for change, and the world followed him. We need to recognize that the world, people in the world are aware. And we can't allow politics to appear as though it's in any way blinding even one single member of our global family. It's not.
Coming back to your book, how did you develop the storyline? What was the favorite part of developing the storyline to your book?
You know, it's very interesting that you asked me that, Johnny. It's a really good question. You know, I was going through a divorce myself through the writing of this book. And I realized all of a sudden that how debilitating and ugly divorce is. And I realized how vulnerable I was, and I saw a lot of women in divorce court who basically were given very little choices, you know, because they've been mothers and wives for a long time, and everything was being controlled with the man with the money.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality was that these women have contributed so much to their families and our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they were going against all odds to just protect themselves or to have some sense of safety for the rest of their lives. And so I found myself wanting to live vicariously through Kelly, my lead character.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's a foster girl that had to go through much bigger obstacles and survive. And the more challenges she was taking on and overcoming, the more it made my plight simpler. So it allowed me not to be the victim, like Bridget said. Think of myself as somebody who is capable of overcoming.
Very interesting. And you also developed the chemistry within the characters, and I thought that was very interesting because within sort of the darkness of life, there's light.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's so easy when you're going through a divorce to kind of think that the relationship is impossible. And so I, in my mind, through writing this chemistry, through writing about Jake and Kelly, in my mind, I was living the kind of relationship that I thought was profound. And, you know, that people can have flaws and support each other through their flaws and get excited by each other because of their innovative thinking and encourage that in each other. And how sensuality and sexuality is really about people caring and being entangled intellectually and having visions together. And, you know, I wanted to show that that kind of a relationship doesn't have to be idolized. It can be real.
How interesting. You put it in a very beautiful way because that's real life, real situation. And it does give us an opportunity to understand that in all actuality, we all have the gray zone within us. And we do live in the gray zone. It's how we look at things and what we want to champion in our life that makes a difference.
Right. And also, I want all your audience to know that proceeds from this book go to Children Uniting Nations to help foster kids and girls who've been sex trafficked. So if they can go on Amazon.com and order the book, they're really helping. Please have everybody go on ChildrenUnitingNations.org. Even $20 buys school supplies for one girl or one boy that don't have anything, even a backpack, even pen, pencils, you know, a little bit of money to go to the movies. And then those that can afford, if they can donate $100, $200, because that's like a session with a therapist. That's a session with an educational therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how everybody needs to become a family and help raise other people's children.
Tell us a little bit more about Children Uniting Nations. I know you founded it. Tell us a little bit more because you have mentoring services that comes with it, and you also mentioned that in the book, of course. So tell us a little bit more about this nonprofit organization.
Well, you know, we started off, actually, the first thing I did was because of my own daughter and realizing how hard it was to get her adopted, we started Adoption Day in the Children's Court in Los Angeles with Public Counsel, which is the largest pro bono legal firm in the country. And Judge Nash was the head of Children's Court. And it became Adoption Saturday. And I was amazed that all the judges and the lawyers, everybody, even the janitors, volunteered so thousands of kids could get adopted and permanent families. And so that was the first thing we did. And then, you know, Hillary Clinton became my mentor and my idol. And she said that that wasn't enough, that we needed to bring these children in front of the community, and we needed the community to embrace these children and to start learning to raise other people's children. Like she wrote in her book, It Takes a Village.
Mm-hmm.
And we started with the day, first day of the child, where we brought only 300 children and 300 mentors, and to our surprise, all 300 children found a mentor, a permanent mentor, and about 80% of them, the mentors became foster parents, and then a huge percentage got adopted.
Mm-hmm.
So we realized that their idea really works. And the next day of the child, actually it was the first day of the child, that Bridget was one of the sponsors. And Pierce Brosnan and many, many celebrities came. And we had 2,000 children, and 98% of them, I think it was like 95% of them got mentors, were
mm-hmm.
being helped. And so then we started to do it with Michael Bloomberg in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then it spread, and now it's in Florida. Cindy Lederer, who is the head of juvenile court in Florida, started it. And then Brazil took it on and made it a national holiday. And then we did it in Israel, and they decided to jump on it. We did it for Palestinian and Israeli children. Israel jumped on it and made it into a national holiday too. And so the charity started to grow. And then we realized that all of these children had cognitive issues. We didn't understand why. So then we involved Dr. Victoria Stevens. And she started researching the neurobiology, and she realized that all children who are abused are traumatized, and it happens to the middle vortex of their brain. Then it suppresses their cognitive ability, and then they are misbranded with ADD and ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
We learned is how to teach them through emotional intelligence, and we started educating graduate university students and send them into the classroom as academic mentors with our children. And all of a sudden, the statistics went from 5% of foster kids graduating to 98% of these kids staying in school. So we realized that we were onto something. And now we are in 13 schools, and they're asking us to go into 31 more school district, which is thousands of schools, but unfortunately the economy is such that the government is unable to give us the money to be able to do it. So
mm-hmm.
we have to get individuals and corporations to help us. It costs us $100,000 a year for 100 kids to be in the academic mentoring program. It costs $250,000 a year for one child to be confined in prison. It's a no-brainer.
Right.
Everybody will start thinking how important it is. It will completely avoid sex trafficking and everything if we can have a mentor for every child in foster care. 70% of the girls who are trafficked are foster girls.
That's amazing. Anything happening to the foster family that does that?
Well, usually the girls are too afraid
to
bring it up. Bridget was one of the few girls that actually at age 24, she informed on her trafficker to the police and got
mm-hmm.
him into jail. But
mm-hmm.
ordinarily the girls are too afraid because the traffickers of the pimps tell them that they're going to kill them, or they're going to kill their mom or their dad.
Right.
You know, so they're too scared. And the problem is that they, because they're juveniles, their files are closed because of the confidentiality law.
Right, right.
So we can't use it to prosecute. And
how interesting.
That's one of the laws we want to change in the conference on Thursday. Two laws we need to change. That's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is to stop criminalizing girls who are trafficked and make them and view them as criminals and throw them into jails, but focus on them as victims and give them mental health and services and help.
It's a mindset issue, because you're right. They're looking at the girls as being the offenders rather than the people they're yanking. These girls are just the mere puppets in this little play.
The girls are innocent. They're all innocent. And the men, think about it, in Florence, where we're going to have our global conference in October, 35-year-old man who's is probably the most brilliant politician in the world now, and he has brought a law that any man that has sex with a juvenile, immediate 20-year jail sentence.
Very interesting.
Have to be tougher. These are men who have wives and children. How dare they do it to another little girl? That's somebody's daughter.
Right. And that's part of the equation here, because they don't think about it as, hey, that's my daughter. What if someone were to do that to your daughter?
They would kill.
That's
right. But
they
don't care because it's somebody else's daughter.
Precisely. And that goes out the door, and that's why you and I speak the same language when we talk about the power of unconditional love. It's just not about within the family. It's about everyone, because we're all human beings. Heck, we care more about the pets that we have. And I'm not talking about we shouldn't, but I'm just giving you an example. We care about a different species. How about our own species?
I agree with you, and I think the lack of consciousness that he's permitted in our world right now is unacceptable. And we need to teach men that, you know, you can't do those things. I mean, look at what's happening. Look at the decline. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Anthony Weiner, you know, name it, John Edwards, mm-hmm. You know, all these people. And why are they doing it? Because they can.
Right.
If our leaders are doing it, what do you expect from a simple lawyer or doctor or teacher?
That's who they're looking at for role models. So we have to change the system. We have to put forth a different kind of role models. And thanks to you and Bridget, you guys are making a tremendous dent. And you guys are getting the right people to do this. So this is fascinating. What would you like your readers to gain from reading The Gray Zone?
I would like my readers to become a part of a movement to change America to the America we all love so much by serving America, by protecting our most needy kids.
I know you mentioned this before, but where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
I have a site that's called Daphna Edwards, EDWARDS, Zyman. Daphna is spelled DAPHNA.com, and they literally will have your interview on there as well. And people should go on ChildrenUnitingNations.org, and please help us become a mentor or donate. It's very important. And also, buy my book, The Gray Zone, because proceeds go towards these kids. And the book can be bought on Amazon.com. And I would be so grateful to you. And please read it and write to me on my site and on my Facebook page, because I really want to hear from people. I want us to become a movement and to create change and put pressure on our administration and our Congress and our Senate, because we need to protect our children and protect our future.
Is Bridget still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Being that we have just talked about a lot of things and you have experienced this firsthand, because you are right there, you're in it, tell us about your take about this entire movement that Daphna has taken on, and what advice do you have for people?
My encouragement is to all girls not to play the victim and to continue with their education. Mental health is a very important fact of healing. That helped me heal. Not turning back and looking at the dark side, I moved forward and saw the light where I needed to move forward, that I had a destiny, that part of my childhood was a bad experience, but I turned into a positive now where I can stay focused. If I can help one child out of 300 million girls out there and reach and touch their heart, they are the victims, that we are not the bad people. We just mm-hmm. need to stay focused and changing laws. I am so happy for Daphna wanting to create laws that these girls are all victims, and we need to get them help and to stay focused. And anything I can do, if I can touch their heart, I totally empathize what girls went through. It's not easy. I was very fortunate that I stayed away from anything negative, even in that line where I had to please men, and the consequences of that, I was not able to have children later on in life, but that doesn't make me hold any grudges. I'm thinking everything from a negative into a positive. I'm encouraging Daphna, and I will be the voice of children, whatever it takes to help girls out there realize that there is a future out there, there is a light. They need to stay strong and have a powerful will.
For Alec Barrington, you are definitely a wonderful poster child for this, because the things that you've gone through, and certainly you started out on your own, because the initial self-initiation of wanting to stay focused is within yourself.
That's correct.
Because there are other situations where people may find you or whatever, but then be strong from within. So having that in mind, what advice do you have for our listeners or people that may be listening to our podcast down the road? What advice do you have for abandoned children? Do you have a number that they can call, not necessarily contact you personally, but is there a way that, you know, I've listened to this, I want to be in touch with someone, I want to get connected, I want to find out how I can get out of this situation?
If they want to reach me, they can go through Children United Nations, and then once they establish a connection with Daphna, then I will then call them personally and tell them, you know, what I can give, because it's hard to discuss how to move forward with your life in 5 minutes on the telephone.
Certainly.
Body, inner sight, the strength that carried me on to realize that my destiny in life was to help children. I had a powerful will, and I realized that I wanted to turn philanthropist, but not just writing out checks, that I need to touch these girls' heart and tell them out. Sometimes it's just a little bit of having that I've been in that predicament, and I will help them find a way to find their soul and to help themselves and get out of the system where they are not the victims anymore, to better themselves.
Very true. Yeah, it's not about giving them a fish to feed them for the day. It's about teaching them how to fish and feed them for a lifetime.
That's correct.
And I love that.
And you can reach me through Daphna's website as well. And I'll be more than happy to talk to girls, even early adults, to 19 or 20-year-olds, or sometimes they're still stuck in that predicament. So I'll be happy to talk to anybody.
And I'm going to start taking Bridget with me when I'm doing interviews on the book and everything, so that she can be there. Because every time I've been on Good Morning, wherever, when I see books afterwards, many girls come to me and they stand in line to get my books. And a lot of them have been trafficked. And a lot of them need help, and a lot of women. And so it would be great for Bridget to really talk to them and show them that there is hope.
I agree, because the immediate thing that hits someone is the embarrassment for what Bridget has done. I mean, it's tremendous. Say, for example, if Bridget decides to stay, you know, behind the curtain, so to speak. Hey, I've got my life straight. That's certainly something I don't need to hang out my dirty laundry out there. And I think Bridget will agree with me. I mean, we're both Asian. We came from a culture that you do not hang out your dirty laundry out there, correct?
That's correct. It was very painful for me to come forward, but I realized I had to come forward because it's not all about me now. It's about me saving other girls' hopes and dreams and having a future out there. Well, for girls being put through all this, it was very painful, but I healed. But I realized that everything I did was for a reason. It was for a journey I must take, and now I'm turning my journey and helping girls out there with their dreams as well.
And what's beautiful about this, ladies, is that this is what the power of unconditional love does, because when you start focusing on the other person, it takes away the focus on you. And what I talk about is basically when you allow love to exceed your fear, you will experience harmony in everything you do. And that's what you ladies are experiencing right now, because you're focusing on someone else. And especially for you, Bridget, because when you focus that on someone else, hey, it doesn't matter anymore.
And that's correct, Johnny. It is, even back now, when I think back, time does heal, but it doesn't always heal completely. And there's always going to be a part of me that will be very vulnerable. But that vulnerability, I will change into a positive. With that vulnerability, I'm able to empathize and realize girls out there that want to reach out and they're afraid to have to talk about it, and they'll have me to talk to, and I will help them do what I can to
Well, because we all speak from the heart, and
yes.
that makes a big difference. So this is real. This is not something that we are reporting, because we are an experiential teachers, that we've been there, done that, we survived it, we came out, and we talk about it to help you. And the question is, do you want to make that shift? We can't make that jump for you, but we'll be there to catch you on the other side.
That's correct. This has been really a pleasure and honor to talk to you. Hopefully, if I can get girls to call me in, that would be so. I would be very more than honored to speak to girls. I understand the pain they're going through and the torment they're going through and the torture and just feeling ashamed, and they should not be ashamed.
And, Johnny, any girl can call the office at 323-944-0500, and they can communicate. They just need to say that they want Bridget to call them back,
mm-hmm.
or they can become a mentor, or they can go through our program, or they can ask for help. We will put them together. There'll be people that can help them. You know, we are here for everybody.
Daphna, what advice do you have for families who are seeking to help abandoned children?
I would love to be able to meet any family that wants to help children. They can help in many ways. We have mentoring, which means you take a child out once every second weekend. You don't change your life. You teach the child to do whatever you are doing. Most of these children have never even been to a supermarket. They've never been on a bus. They don't know what money looks like. They've never had a checkbook. They need to learn life skills. They need to learn to cook. They need to learn what is healthy and what is not healthy. All of these things, people in America can help us to help these girls and boys. We also have mentoring, which means it's either occupational mentoring, where you teach one of these children how to become or how to have an occupation that they can survive with, or we have academic mentoring, which means we train you to go into a classroom. If you've had a degree, if you're older, if you're younger, if you're a university student, please call us, because we really need you. And then we need life skill mentors, academic mentors, occupational mentors, but we need friends. We need people that will call these children and will be there for them when they run into trouble. And those are permanent friends that we connect with these children. We have a training every second weekend. We teach you everything there is to know to be the best possible mentor you can be. And if you want to do more, become a foster parent. We will help you become a foster parent. And if you really want to give a child a permanent, loving family, adopt a child, we will help you. We will do whatever it takes. And if you can't do any of the above, find that place in your heart to just send a little bit of money for us so that we can help these children. As I said, $20 helps with school supplies. $100 can help one session with a therapist. It's so important. Please help us.
There's so many ways of helping. If you don't have the time, then obviously give the money, and the people that have the time are able to get the job done. But ultimately, if you feel like you want to contribute yourself, then there's always, by all means, get it going.
Johnny, let me tell you, most of our mentors, and we have thousands and thousands of mentors and foster parents and adoptive parents now,
mm-hmm.
they're all telling me that their lives changed drastically for a more positive life since they did it, because they started walking with their destiny. It's amazing. The law of the universe is such that it's the law of supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever is there is available, but we have to give and receive, not just take, take, take.
Very true. And also, again, when you give your time, it's far more important than just writing a check.
Yeah, both are important.
Yeah.
Because without the money, we can't continue to serve these children. And we need money and we need people. And we need this country to start being conscientious, to start looking at itself as a family. The American family doesn't live here anymore. Over 50% of all families are divorced. Our parents, they are seniors, and then there are children who are discarded. Those children are our future. What kind of a future are we buying into? If you're asking your country right now to invest in all of us, how about us investing in our children?
Well, that's the future. And I've got some wonderful news for you with regards to that, because the latest Pew research shows that for the first time, the younger generations are thinking what they call the millennial generations, children that are born after 1980, view being a good parent is far more important than relationships. Because you're right, you know, relationships may not last a lifetime, but once you have a child, that's a lifetime commitment. And so you have to be good parents.
Absolutely. And I just so that your viewers know, I really encourage people who are thinking of divorce to go to couples therapy, to work things out.
Mm-hmm.
Divorce is not the solution. You do not break families. And the cancer of our population is the divorces. It's like the split of a cell that's unnatural that causes cancer. It's the same here.
How has writing your book impacted you personally?
It has freed me to believe that I have my own identity. And it has freed me to believe that I can make more of a difference because people like you, Johnny, want to talk to me. And through that, I can talk to your public. And I can ask them to help me.
Thank you very much for that comment. What can we expect from you the second half of this year?
Well, I'm in the middle of writing my second book. I have a number of people that we've put together who are economic leaders, and those people are putting together with me an unbelievable potential studio of the 21st century, where we are going to base the entire effort on conscientious media, on being able to make movies and distribute them in a profound way, so it's not all about about sensationalism. We are working very hard to create a different momentum, and these are some of the most forerunning people in the world, economic leaders, conscious leaders, media leaders, and we've all come together to do this. So I'm very excited about the potential of a much more conscientious decade ahead.
I do want to ask you this, and I'm going to set it up for you, because all of my guests that comes on my show has an opportunity to let us know, to give us their word of wisdom in a form of a recipe for living. As a mother, you realize what I'm talking about in terms of
things. Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, I'm glad. So we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living that you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
My recipe for living is discard the negativity inside of you. Recognize that you create your own limitation. Recognize that you are one with God and therefore you are limitless. And if your intention is pure, and if you come from a place of love and kindness, and if you believe that, yes, you can do whatever your dream is, achieve your dreams, then your life will be a good life, and also you will give your children the right messages, and you will live the kind of life where you can be proud to walk with your destiny.
That's beautiful. How about you, Bridget? Do you have a recipe for living that you would like to share with all our listeners this morning?
Just go for the brass ring. Do not feel sorry for yourself. Let that inner child heal, move forward, seek counseling, get a proper education, and live your life to the fullest. Make everything a brighter spot. Look for the light. It is there. There's so much opportunity out there and so much for yourself to love and give and to help another child as well. I can't express myself. Everybody out there, please foster families. Please reach out. What I would have given to have one night as a child, to have a safe pillow where I felt so secure, that got taken away from me, but that's all in the past now. Live and go on. Move forward and look at the light. Believe in God. He's there for us. We just need to hear him.
Fabulous. Fantastic. Ladies, thank you for the great recipes for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Rina Romano. She's a professional speaker and a speaking coach. Her latest endeavor is her memoir titled His Pet No More. It is a courageous true story about her triumph over the years of horrendous sexual abuse and victimization by her monstrous relative. Rina and I will be discussing about her life's journey, her memoir, and her passion to help other lives live their own extraordinary life. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Daphna, Bridget, thank you again and have a great day.
Johnny, thank you
so much, Johnny. We're so honored.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.